speaker for today. We've known each other for 7 years, I guess. And she's a wonderful speaker, medium, and friend, Jennifer Madriaga.
Got to get the platform because I'm short. Good morning, everybody. It's so nice to see all of you today, and it's nice to have another opportunity to be behind the rostrum giving a sermon again this year. And every time I'm up here, I always have to reflect back to the first time I come to this church. And of course, the song that we just played, which was Over the Rainbow by Iz, and he is an artist from Hawaii, which is where I'm originally from. And that song played, and the person giving the sermon was actually Scott. And I remember calling him Reverend Scott. He goes, "Oh no, I'm not Reverend." And it's funny because now he is. And he never ever thought he would be. And what was really cool, too, is when Scott gave his opening quote today, it's very much about what I'm going to talk about, which is the things that we go through to get to where we need to be. Because that seems to be a theme that's been very pervasive for 2019. And also, there's a lot of reflection going on as we go into 2020. And isn't that number rife with so much meaning, right? 2020. You know, the benefit of hindsight and clarity. And so I'm hoping that all of us collectively, not just individually, will get there, because it's been a very interesting past few years, to say the least, for a lot of us. A lot of the things that I've witnessed in the past decade, which I guess started in 2010, it's pretty amazing to think about how much has changed in that time, in the 10 years that's happened, how much my own life has changed and how much the lives of other people have changed dramatically. So in 2010, I was finalizing my divorce, and I didn't know what to do with my life. I literally did not know what to do. My entire identity had been wrapped around being a homemaker and a wife. And my son actually was barely a year old, and I really did not know what to do. All I know is that I had lost everything. And what was funny this morning as I was scrolling through Facebook, so I was trying to think of other things to talk about, this quote, actually it was a friend of ours that Scott and I have, Alicia. There was a quote that she had put on her Facebook timeline that said, "On the way to becoming the woman you're meant to be, you will lose everything." And I went, wow, okay, so I'm meant to talk about that. I'm meant to talk about the things that go wrong, that go drastically wrong, and we're left wondering, why did this happen? You know, why didn't things work out? And so when I was going through my divorce, I hadn't worked in almost a decade. And if any of you have ever been out of the workforce for any significant amount of time, you know how difficult it is to get back into the workplace. I know that my dilemma is not particularly unusual, particularly for women who've left the workforce to become homemakers or mothers. It is incredibly hard to get back into the workforce. And so I went on a lot of job interviews, and what would happen time and time again is that they would look at my resume and go, "Oh, you have really good experience from 10 years ago. What were you doing since then?" And I always answered honestly, "Well, I was a homemaker, and then I decided to stay home with my son. But I have all this great volunteer experience I did while I was home." Or, "Yeah, that's not professional experience, you know. Thank you, but no thank you." And I literally went on dozens of interviews where I got that kind of answer. And then I finally got an interview for a job I actually really didn't want, but I needed it. I needed the job because I had spent almost a year and a half looking for a job, and I needed to have a job. And I knew that I was not going to like this job. I knew that I was probably not going to get along with the people there. But I asked myself, I said, "Is this my destination?" And I'm like, "No, it's not my destination, but I definitely need a stepping stone to the destination," right? And so that's how I want people to look at their adversities, right? So, and I was right about this job. This job did not make me very happy. But I was there for 2 years, and it was enough experience for me to get the job that I currently have, which is a global marketing manager at Red Hat, where I make more money than I ever have. And I also get to travel the world and go to 5-star hotels courtesy of my company. And so... which I never thought I would do. Like, you know, I remember actually when I was doing my wish list of things I wish would happen while I was in this job slogging away working weekends, I was like, well, what would I love to see happen? Well, I would love to see me traveling for a living internationally, getting paid to do it, and also having, you know, if I didn't have to travel to work from home, which I have. Like, I'm still, like, floored that it's happened. But it took a very convoluted way to get there. Like, it took rejection time and time again. It took being in a job that was honestly really awful for me and my, like, mental and emotional well-being. But what was funny about the job that I had before was that, you know, you get kind of comfortable with being uncomfortable. You get comfortable with not being treated well. And that had been true of most of my life, where if you are used to having that as kind of your baseline, if you're not used to expansiveness, expansiveness can feel very, very, very frightening. And so what ended up happening at my last job was that we had a bunch of people quit all at once, and then I was having to do the job of three other people plus myself, so I was doing the job responsibilities of four people, and that is simply just not sustainable. And it took it getting to that point for me to be brave enough to say to myself, I need to look elsewhere and find something else. And so that's when I went through my list of what I wanted to happen. I didn't know how it was going to happen. I didn't know, you know, what was going to happen. And that was like one of the many times that I had to trust in faith, right? So I think 2019 has been a real test of faith for a lot of people. And I think, you know, it's not coincidental that it's right before 2020, which I really do think will be a time of really great relief. I hear that myself energetically, but I also hear lots of other people who do the kind of intuitive work that I do, that's going to be a really good year. We just have to survive 2019 and get to 2020, right? But one of the things that I think about time and time again is the things that happened to me and to other people and the times that we all said to ourselves, I wish that didn't happen, or why did that happen? So when I think in terms of rejection, I think about the times when, like I said, I didn't get the job. When I remember there's this one job, I was like praying, and I was like, I hope I get this job. And, you know, and even the people that were talking to me, like, you are amazing, we really want you for this position. But what ended up happening is they gave the job to an internal candidate because they had to, given the procedures that they had at this particular workplace. And in retrospect, I'm really glad I didn't get that job, because you know what, if I had gotten that job, I probably would have stayed there a very long time, and I would have never been forced to grow. I would have never been forced to be uncomfortable and to discover something greater than I could ever envision. And that's the thing that I want people to kind of hold in their space, is that there's something greater than yourselves that is out there waiting for you. And I think that's actually true of a lot of us who come to this church. Like, I think there are times that we've experienced that have been so low and so dark that we could have never envisioned having the life that we have right now. And if you're not at that place where you're like, well, I'm not really at the place I want to be right now, that's okay. Because as long as you know that you're on a journey to somewhere, you're actually doing fine, right? Just think about it. If things aren't okay now, they will be okay later. Just remember that you're in a stepping stone towards greater appreciation of what you will eventually receive. So when I didn't have very much money and I was unemployed, I remember I heard someone say, and I think it was actually Sandy Taylor, who is a Hay House author, and she had a radio show that I would hear online. But she said, if you can't be grateful for anything you have right now, and there is always something you can be grateful for, like being alive, being able to have breath. For me, it was my dog who's wandering around, my son, beautiful days. There were still things I could be grateful for, but if you're convinced there's nothing to be grateful for in the here and now, be grateful for the things that are yet to come, for those moments of bliss and beauty and happiness that you have yet to experience. And also be grateful for the darkness that's upon you. You know, like there's the saying that without darkness, you can't see the stars and moon, right? And then there was also this poem, and I can't remember, it was a Japanese poet that wrote this, but it went, barns burned down, now I can see the moon. And I remember just thinking, wow, that's a pretty profound thing to encapsulate in just, you know, a couple of phrases. To have something, if something like a barn burns down, it's pretty catastrophic, right? Especially if it was filled with harvest or livestock. But the author's saying, but now I can see the moon. So there's opportunity that always happens in times of adversity and tragedy and pain. Like I always think about Mr. Rogers when he said, you know, when bad things happen, look for the helpers. Look for the helpers. And that's what I was forced to do, was I was forced to go outside myself to look for help. You know, and that didn't come easily to me. Like, I think a lot of us learn self-reliance very early on. And so faith is also about surrender. And surrender is one of the hardest things that I have had to learn in the past 10 years, right? And surrender leads to kind of that leap of faith. Letting go enough of wanting to be in control of the situation that you have to trust that things will turn out okay. And so what is it that we can do while we're in this space, you know, what I call the trapeze artist's leap of faith, right, where you let go of that one bar to grab onto the other. There's that space where you're not holding on to anything. And it may be a very brief space, or it may be a space that lasts or feels like it lasts a very long time. And it's also the same space that you have when you're cocooned, right, between caterpillar and then becoming the butterfly. That's probably the hardest space to be in, because things are happening, but you don't see it yet. You don't see the things manifesting. It's the seed in the ground which hasn't sprouted, which hasn't become the giant oak tree, right? There's always this waiting, this kind of gestational period that happens. You know, that to me is a space where a lot of people have been in for the past few years. And it's probably the most difficult phase to go through. And so what do? Well, you talk about living in the present moment, right? And so when you're in that space, you may not want to live in the present moment, but it actually is very important to live in the present moment. And for me, one of the things that has been very beneficial is my meditation practice. I don't know if anyone else practices meditation. I know people think of it as being very difficult to do or something kind of boring, but it's actually very, very simple. The fundamental basis of meditation is your breath, right? So I'm going to have us just do like a basic just meditate. Just, okay, everyone's going to breathe in through their nose and just hold it for like a second. So let's do it now. Breathe out. It's incredibly hard to master doing breath. It's very funny because we breathe every day, but our natural default for a lot of us is we hold our breath, especially if we're very anxious or very nervous, or even if we're angry, we do this where we're very shallow in our breath and we don't breathe deeply. But if you're into science, and I'm into science because I do love science. I had a second major in biology, so I do love the sciences. I do the woo-woo stuff, but I do love, you know, science and the universe and all that good stuff. But they have done studies on the breath. And when you take deep breaths, you know, when people yawn or people go, you know, when things are aggravating, there is a scientific reason for that, right? Is that when we expand our breath, it automatically decompresses our parasympathetic nervous system and decompresses us. And so if you don't know what to do, one of the things I learned to do while I was in that waiting period was actually just to concentrate on my breath. And so the reason why I bring this up is that sometimes things feel so much bigger than us that we are paralyzed about what to do. And so if you are in a state of paralysis, I would say remember your breath. And that's something everybody can do, right? So let's do it again, because I think people can use another deep breath. So let's breathe in through the nose. Hold it. And then breathe out with noise. Okay, let's do it one more time. One more, because I like doing it in threes. I don't know if you can feel this, but I can already feel a shift in energy in the room. Can you feel that? It's a lot quieter, right? And so, you know, part of what I wanted to talk about, right, is simple things, easy things to do to make sure that we can do breath by breath to get to where we need to be, right? And it's by focusing on these really, really small things that we can do, that's how we get to the destination. That's how we get to the destination, right? There's a lot of fear out in the world right now. I can feel it, and I'm very sensitive energetically. I've been doing energetic work for a long time now, but even I get affected by just being out in the world, by watching the news, by reading news articles, by just being in traffic. Like, being in traffic is, you know, like if I'm on 40 on the way to Raleigh from Durham and I'm trapped in traffic, I mean, it's real challenging for me because I don't like being stuck in traffic. I don't like sitting there, and there's so much symbolism right that to sitting in traffic and not being able to go anywhere. Like, you're not near any exit and you have to simply wait. And I actually laugh at myself because I realize, oh, that's actually a good reminder to go ahead and practice my breathing. But also, when you practice breathing, things will start coming up once you start doing that over and over again, right? So if you start deepening your meditation practice, some people think the goal of meditation is not to feel anything, and that is actually not true. What will happen is if you have not felt anything in a very long time, like me, when I started my meditation practice, I had repressed anger and sadness and grief because I was always wanting to be in control of the situation. I never allowed myself to feel. I'm someone who tends to over-intellectualize a great deal, and I do consider myself an intellectual. I have academic training. I have 2 degrees from Duke. So I was someone who lived inside my head a lot. Like, I was always living up here. And living in here was completely foreign to me. To live inside the heart center is a very difficult place to be if you've never been taught how to feel. And I mean, it seems really funny because you think that feeling is a natural thing, and it is. But when you have years of conditioning telling you that it's not okay to express how you're feeling, you have to undo that kind of calcification, that hardening of your heart, so that you can feel safe enough to release those things that have accumulated, in my case, over decades. Like, it was basically 40 years of not feeling anything in any really deep way. Maybe I felt it, but it was like I took it and I put it in a corner somewhere to fester. Because your emotions will fester and they will throw a temper tantrum until you have to let them out in some way, you know. Hopefully you can do it in a productive way, and sometimes it's a not-so-productive way. And in either case, you still have to be very forgiving of yourself. But anyway, back to what happens when you deepen meditation. So the entire point is not to feel everything. The point is actually to be an observation of what happens. And so what I found, because I started with 10 seconds, because I actually have ADD, so it's very hard for me to stay focused, and so I really had to really work at this. I would do a timer. It was like 30, like 10 seconds, 30 seconds, a minute, 5 minutes, 10, 15, until I actually got it at my height. I could meditate for 2 straight hours. I don't know that I recommend that, because it became a form of escapism, but it was pretty blissful to get to that point. But when I started deepening my meditation practice, all this stuff started coming up. Like, I would sit there and just really just be focusing on my breathing. I didn't even do mantra work. I just focused on my breathing, and all of a sudden I would feel myself welling up and crying. And I didn't even know why I was crying. All that I knew was that there was stuff coming up, and I would be sometimes racked with sobs, and I would have to stop, and I would have to kind of lie in a fetal position and cry until it had expended itself. And I remember the first time that happened, I was kind of panicked. I'm like, oh, wow, I'm really doing this wrong. But then I was reading a book, and it said, actually, you're supposed to feel things. That's an important part of meditation, is to let things float to the surface, and you let them go, right? Because I realized that I had accumulated all this junk in my attic, my emotional attic, so to speak. And it was time to have, like, a yard sale. It was time to let that stuff go. It was time to wheel that over to the thrift store and let that go, right? And it's hard to let things go. I hold a grudge. I admit it. I am really petty. Like, there are things I think about that happened to me in elementary school that still make me a little bit angry, like the time in first grade when someone stole my dollar for lunch. And it was this little girl who said, can I see your dollar bill? And because I was so trusting, I gave it to her, and she ran away. And I didn't get to eat lunch that day. And I remember seeing her later on the playground, going, why did you take my dollar? I couldn't eat. And she said, because I had to eat. And I think about that. I think about when people do wrong to you, when people inflict pain on you. You're okay, Gandalf. You don't need to cry. That there's something causing that. There's something also within themselves that causes them to do that, whether it's a sense of self-preservation. And sometimes people are very self-righteous about their pain. I think that's one thing I've observed in 2019 and also the past few years. People are really self-righteous about the pain they're in. They use it as a ready justification for inflicting pain upon others. But one thing I've learned about people who inflict pain on others is that they're pretty good about inflicting pain upon themselves. And that's something that I've had to own too, because I realized that by disallowing feeling for so many years, I was not very good to myself, but I was also not very good to other people. I think about the person I was 10 years ago, as we now move into this new decade, and honestly, I didn't like myself very much. Like, I don't know that if I met that person, she walked through that door today, that I would like her very much, but I would have immense compassion for her. In fact, I have immense compassion for her now. And I also have immense understanding for the things that she did, because she didn't know any better. And you know what? We're all that person. We all have that person from 10, 15, 20, maybe yesterday. Who knows? Maybe you had a bad day yesterday. We were that person that maybe we didn't like very much. And our goal is to look at that person with immense compassion and love and go, I understand why you did the things you did and you were forgiven. And I think if more people were able to practice forgiveness with themselves, it would be much easier to forgive other people. One of the things that's very easy to do when you focus on what other people do wrong is you don't have to have any accountability for yourself, and you don't have to focus on your growth and the decisions you've made that maybe haven't been so great. Like, I like to think that I'm a good person, but I also know that I'm an immensely flawed person. I'm deeply flawed. And I actually heard this term the other day on a podcast, which I thought was so cool, and it was that you are flawsome. So you're flawed and awesome. Those things go together. That your awesomeness comes from being flawed. You know, that in accepting the things that make us who we are, which is sometimes like I'm prone to road rage, and sometimes I hold grudges a little bit too long because I've got a lot of Leo in me and I've got a lot of pride, I'm able to own and recognize, you know, that's a tendency that I have. And I can kind of laugh about it. I can look at it with immense humor and gratitude that I am the way that I am, because honestly, it also makes me capable of great generosity, great appreciation. And by knowing what it's like to be wounded and prideful and hurt, I can recognize that when it happens to other people, right? That's the gift. The gift of being wounded is the fact that you can recognize compassion and generosity, first hopefully with yourself and then for others. So there's the quote, "The wound is where the light enters, and I believe it's by Rumi, but I also cited to Leonard Cohen. I'll gladly give both of them credit. But it's true. That pathway into woundedness is also where we can find realization. And for me, the goal is actually not to be happy all the time. I mean, I think that's a little bit that's for me not a goal. And I don't know that that's a great goal. The goal for me is acceptance and contentment, right? Because we're not always going to be happy. Like when I'm at work and I'm having to do something that's very tedious, I'm not very happy having to do like budgets or expense reports when I'm in it. I have to do it, and I do it because it needs to get done in order to keep what I'm doing functioning so that I can continue to receive budget to do the things that I need to do, right? I can't say that I'm happy doing those things, or I'm not particularly happy when I'm stuck in traffic getting to a place, or I'm not happy when I'm stuck on a plane for 14 hours trying to get to that destination. Like, I'm not happy. But I still have immense gratitude that I have this opportunity to be on the place to somewhere else, that I have the opportunity to be doing tasks that will bring me to someplace else. And so I have to be very grateful for the fact, oh, wow, I'm doing the expense report because you know what? I was able to go to an awesome trip to Barcelona, Spain, where I ate really marvelous tapas. And yes, now I have to do an expense report, but wow, that was so worth it. So there's always going to be work attached to the things that we want to do or the things that we need to get to. And we're not going to be happy doing that, but we can be in surrender and in acceptance of doing those things while also being in immense gratitude that this is an opportunity for things to start happening. So I just want to leave you with that. Remember your breath. Remember that when you're in the place between here and there, to always be in gratitude. And that you don't always have to be happy, just grateful. And so that's all I have for you today, and thank you so much for all your time.
Thank you.